Hello there. Today on this episode of the Gamers Guild Shatterpoint Edition, we are going to be talking about elevation and terrain features of this game. My name is Sean, and welcome to the Gamers Guild. Hey, everybody. This is Sean. Today I am joined by one absolute Matt, a.k.a. Matt. How you doing, Matt?
I'm good, Sean. How about you this week?
Doing well, doing well. Just been wrapping up our local league of Star Wars Shatterpoint over here in Memphis. So been jamming that quite a bit.
Did you run that list we talked about?
Have not had my last match to do so yet. So that will be legal in this coming match I have this week.
Nice.
And also, we have a brand new host joining us. We have Right Mad, a.k.a. Ben. Ben, how you doing?
Hi, I'm doing well. Just glad to be on the cast with you guys. I think I've made it to the big leagues now. We've made the dream. We're living the dream.
Indeed, indeed. Some people we might be the minor leagues, but you know we're cracking up there for sure. So please introduce yourself. Where would people know you from prior to this, if at all?
Yeah, so I'm Right Mad Ben. I've been on the MCP Gamers Guild cast a couple of times with Nate. I was a part of a podcast called Crisis Point for a while. I've been kind of like a pitch hitter for a couple casts around the while in the MCP community, and have been exploring Shatterpoint and really excited about just another wonderful AMG game. But most people would know me on the Discords and other podcasts that I've been kind of floating around and doing pitch hitting stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I know I got to meet you for the first time at this past NashCon, and we got to kind of play, didn't get to play MCP together, of course, since I was TOing. However, it was fun just to like play some of the other games we were doing after the event and the days leading up to. So it was nice to meet you and your wife, and had a blast, honestly.
It is, so this was our second year coming to NashCon. We live all the way in upstate New York. We're real close to our Canadian brothers and sisters, which is real fun. Nice and cold, but it is really awesome to go down to Nashville with a great crew like yourself, with Matt, with Nate, you know, the rest of the Gamer Guild, you know, folks. It is just a great joy. And it wasn't like silly hot this year, and we had a cool room. So we're still just kind of living off the high of NashCon. It was a really awesome event, and I'm excited to. Unfortunately, I had not painted up all of my Shatterpoint stuff at the time, and we were already bringing like 30 MCP models, so I didn't want to add any more on the long trip. But next year, we plan on definitely throwing some Shatterpoint in the travel box.
Oh, absolutely!
Yeah, I know. Same here.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, I know next year I think there's a lot bigger of a plan to try to do a full-fledged Shatterpoint event. This time around, it would end up being kind of last minute. I know the main day we were able to get, I was actually trying to host a little something on Friday, and a lot of people that play Shatterpoint also play MCP, so they were doing the team event that day. So we had, you know, we had some people come through, gave out some demos and whatnot, but ended up not being its own full-fledged deal, but next year, we'll have a bit more advertisement, jump on the ball a little bit earlier since we now know about the game instead of it just being announced.
Yeah, you know, Ben and I help. Actually played.
Yep. Oh, what was that, Matt? Go ahead.
I was going to say, Ben and I actually played each other in that team tournament on Friday.
Oh, yeah,
we don't,
right.
Matt, we don't talk about that game. That game still hurts my soul, and that's okay.
It was still fun.
It was a really wonderful, wonderful game. It was super, super fun. Lots of slaps were had, just like the slaps that can be had in Shatterpoint.
Absolutely, yes. Absolutely. Yeah. I think with that note, we'll go ahead and get on to our box review for the episode. We are wrapping up the week of the Grievous and Luminara. So we've already did Grievous last episode, so we're on to the Luminara box. So let's go ahead and talk about the lady herself. Let's go ahead and go around and give a, what's something you guys like about this character? Matt, we'll go ahead and start with you.
Giving me the easy fruit, huh? I'll take her full recovery power for 2 force, where she gets to heal an allied unit within 3 all the way up and all the conditions.
Yeah. Yeah, that is insanely strong. I've played against her, honestly, not that much. I think just because of the character herself, I think a lot of people don't find her that popular, at least here locally. But anytime I've seen her on the table, she's actually been a force to be reckoned with. No pun intended there.
See what you did there.
Right, right, right. Ben, what about you? What's something you like about this character?
It's interesting, that you mentioned. I've seen, not as much excitement for old Lumi as well. I love Luminara. I think she's awesome. I love Form 3 Masters. I think Form 3 is my favorite Jedi fighting style. And so when you have a Form 3 Master like Master Luminara, it's really exciting. But I really love the flow of the Force, which is part of her identity. And what I think it's so neat about it, is there's always something that you can do with it, right? If you are wounding models or you are getting wounded, you are gaining some benefit. And the more that I play with her or have been played against with her, it kind of opens up the field of you can be really proactive with her identity. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. It has a lot of flexibility with it. Just as you mentioned, it has all those different pips that you can hit and do things with. It's really, really good.
Actually, that last part of it is probably the best part, in my opinion, where you can actually look at the top of your order deck before deciding to activate your reserve unit.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah. if you reserve really early in the struggle, you can still kind of take a peek and really have more information for you to do. So I think she's great. I really wish we'd see some more of her on the table. She's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess with my choice here, since you guys took some of the easier ones here, I actually do mention, you mentioned Form 3 yourself, her defensive expertise track on that side is bananas. I have thrown so many dice into her just for her to shut me down and maybe get like 1 to 2 pips on my attack tree. It's disgusting. Just how she can just block, turn crits to hits and failure and hits to failures. It is really, really good.
Yeah. I'm a big old nerd. And so I super love the flavor that they add to the different stances. I think that's my favorite part of this game. And so when we see these defensive, that's Form 3 is the defensive style. And so, yeah, I just love being able to run her up right in the middle and say, "What? Come at me, bro." It's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you see a little bit of shades of like Dooku with it, with that Form 3 there, with how defensive that expertise track really makes her.
I don't want to shoot at her.
Yeah, no, not at all. It's so bad. Okay, so from there, what is something you guys dislike? And actually, Ben, we'll start with you this time.
Yeah, so you know one of the things that makes me super sad is when a Jedi can't do the super like Jedi hop leap, jump from the tallest building. And so she doesn't have a force jump. She has a sprint. I'm a little sad that she can't force jump. I would have loved, you still use the same range tool. But obviously you can scale a lot of the elevation. It's like, we'll talk about that a little bit later too. It's kind of disappointing that she has sprint instead of a force jump.
Yeah, it does make her a little bit slow on the battlefield. The one thing I've found is she can be kind of kited a bit, because she has a hard, unless she has assistance from someone else, she has a hard time kind of getting in it. So what about you, Matt? What do you think? What is your dislike?
I'm not too fond of her attacks, honestly, because they're not going to pump out damage for you. She, on Form 3, she's not going to be helping control the battlefield. On Form 2, she will a little bit because she has 2 earlier pushes on 2 and 3, but Yeah, overall, she's not going to be the one that's going to... She's more of a supporting piece rather than controlling the field.
Yeah, for sure. She definitely is a tank in her own right, if you will. She has like 9 stamina, for sure. But mentioning that defensive track earlier. But yeah, her attacks are not the greatest. She does have a reposition on that first pip on form 2, which I do think is, you know, nothing to sneeze at. But damage-wise, she's not packing a lot of punch. So yeah, I definitely see what you're talking about here. I guess for me, I think this is one of the most, if not the most, force-hungry primaries we've seen yet. She will devour your force pool if you let her. Not to say that it's not worth it, probably the majority of the time. But between her and like maybe like Asajj Ventress or maybe even like Dooku, they can just eat your force, and she's only bringing 3 to the table instead of 4, like some of these other characters, like Dooku. So that's just something to keep an eye out. And like the moment she's hard to wound, but when she's wounded, now you're spending 3 for that 4 recovery, 2 for sprint, 2 for precise strike. It gets a little wonky.
Definitely.
Yeah, and you know, I really like precise strike in the opportunities when it's available. I don't know about you guys. I have found precise strike to be kind of difficult to pull off. But the few times that I have, it's been significantly impactful.
Yeah, I've personally not played Luminara myself, just going off the lens of playing against her. Out of the like 3 or 4 games I've played against her, I've seen it done like once. Yeah, I definitely see what you're talking about. Because the fact that it's only a supporting unit, they have to be within that 3. It is, you're going to find yourself a lot of times you're just not quite in that position, unless you're just like preemptively seeing that ahead of time and going up there and sticking her around those supports. It'd be a little rough.
Yeah, I haven't played with her as well because, yeah, you know me, I'm mostly dark side.
Well, we need to get some Form 3 Masters up. That's why I was brought on the show as a Form 3 Master myself right here. Just
Kenny needed the backup. Actually, yeah, Kenny needed the backup. I know Matt and I, we're definitely some Sith over here for sure.
Uh-oh.
I mean, Absolute is in my name, right?
That is correct.
It's in the name.
It says it all, right? All right, so let's just go to her Padawan here with Barriss Offee. So we have a very interesting secondary, I think, here. We'll go ahead with what you like. We'll start with Ben. We'll go ahead with you. What do you like about this here?
Oh, I'm going to steal it right away. Force push all day. Man, do I love force push. Barriss is awesome. And any time that you can just yeet somebody range 3, is a pretty feels good moment. You know, it's going to be very rare that you're going to, you know, get the full trigger on her attack tree, to get it for free. But, I don't know about you, but finding it, you know, using the core set, with Asajj, being able to force push people, was just awesome. So when Barriss came out, I said, yes, please give me more force push. And, I love it.
Yeah, force push is insanely strong. That range 3, push 3 is gas money.
just yeet the... love it.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I know a lot of people were down on Asajj when that box was, you know, like the core was revealed on that. And like the more we play, I think she's one of the better, like top... I don't know if she's the best, but I would put her probably at least 2nd.
Yeah, I don't know why Asajj gets some...
Yeah, she's one of my favorites.
Yeah,
she's insane. Yeah. Matt, what about you? What do you think here?
I like her. I mean, because she's basically a light side of Asajj. So I mean, but specifically, since the force push is already taken, the slip away. So she's pretty mobile, more mobile than you would expect. So if you're attacking with one of your other clones or Galactic Republic people, she can, if she's engaged, then she gets to reposition away and gains hunker to help her out.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's very, very strong. So I guess with me, I'll go with, you know, I was going to cheese it and just say to follow suit with you and say her four speed, but I'm actually going to go with a faithful Padawan. The fact that if she is engaged with another ally like Jedi primary and they're fighting the same target, she can give two dice that are targeting the enemy character. I think that's really, really good. Especially with like some of the stuff on her attack tree going on there. I know she gets like a active power. She can potentially hit that free force push if she hits five down her track. Also, when she makes the second fold of that, so she makes a recover action, she can each other allied within three may remove a damage or condition from herself. So that has like a two-fold ability. I think it's very, very powerful.
I think you'll see that second part trigger more than the first part.
Probably so, unless you're just like forcing, like shoving her down with like a primary. But yeah, it really depends. But yeah, that second part is really, really strong and all in its own. I think the first part, albeit it's also strong, I will agree, you're probably not going to see it quite as often as the second part.
So, you know, I guess what's interesting is it's sometimes difficult to talk about characters in a vacuum. Right. You know, ifs and buts, you know, and all, for me, I think Barriss is really interesting where I think her synergies really come to life when you talk about some other characters. And obviously, I think one of the best synergies for Barriss and Lumi is Obi-Wan. And just making some of the out of activation move shenanigans that you can get. On top of heals, on top of all of this other stuff, and some faithful Padawan alongside Obi-Wan. It's I've had a couple of games where that has been really successful and pretty awesome. But you know, Sean, you mentioned it earlier, that squad tends to be really, really force hungry and can be kind of difficult once you actually start piling the wounds on them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think with her, like Barriss here, I want to say you really want to hit that faithful Padawan triggers if you can, because it gives you the two extra dice along with your primary. And instead of burning that force for like force push, for instance, you can just hit it on her tree. So it kind of helps mitigate that, right? So I think like me personally, if I'm playing this character, like I would be trying to hit those triggers or like, to get that faithful Padawan online and go for it. But I guess kind of in the same means, we're starting to see some of like the limitations of this character. We'll go ahead and shift to what we don't like. And I'll go ahead and kick it off here. Yeah. The fact that to have her work, you in the twofold of that faithful Padawan, you really want to send her with that primary when most primaries in the game are already probably going to get the job done themselves, unless if they're just going after another primary.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. I think Barriss really benefits from central play, right? So, and we've got just the one mission pack. So if, you know, if there's a clump, you know, of fights that are happening right in the middle, I think Barriss super excels. But yeah, if your opponent kind of knows what's going on, and separates Barriss from some primaries, I think she gets in trouble really quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. What about you, Matt? What do you think?
I think she just has not seen enough on the table. I've actually never played against her. She seems to be overlooked. I mean, she has a good kit, but she has a lot of, people that are the same point costs as her that people rather take rather than trying her out. Cause I mean, she does have a good kit, and if I ever play light side, she'll probably be in my list.
Yeah. I do like her quite a bit. I think locally they have their own, there's been some opinions that I do kind of agree with, but Ben, like, what about you? We'll go with what your thought is first before I go into that. What do you think? What's something you don't like?
Well, first, you know, I'm surrounded by Sith, so we gotta get you guys to come to the light a little bit. Matt, we'll get you to come to the light.
I mean, she's kind of Sith if you watch Clone Wars a little bit.
We don't spoilers.
I mean, that thing's been out for forever now.
You're not wrong. Yeah, it's very difficult. You know, Sean, you named it really well. this is such a force hungry box that if you're not careful and prioritizing well, or you know, it's awesome when you can throw, you know, some dice with Barriss and you can get her trigger. I think I've only been able to do that like twice. And that's, you know, really difficult because her expertise tree isn't super great. I mean, it's not terrible when you roll two expertise and get three, you know, benefits from it. That's always really cool. But I have found, and maybe this is just, I think the Galactic Republic benefits right now, that they kind of fall off the cliff the moment you put a wound on some of these characters. And the synergies start to break down. It gets really, really difficult really quickly. So that's, you know, and this box really exacerbates that, right? You know, yeah. Doing three force for force push is almost, you just not worth it, right? Unless it's going to swing and win you the game, right? But yeah, I mean, and that's just my struggle overall with Galactic Republic right now. The clones and the Jedi, I think that's where they really struggle. Is, man, if you put some wounds on them, it's going to go downhill really quickly, really fast.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I will say they're getting got a little bit of like that force love with Mace Windu, which we'll probably be going over our next episode after this. You said it best, I think, right there. Like a lot of our Republic figures here, they have a very strong opening. They have very powerful abilities. They have a lot of good recovery options with healing. But the moment they catch wounds, the house of cards, if you will, really starts to crumble. So, all right. Well, with that said, we'll go on to the support, and we'll wrap this up with the box review. We got the Republic Clone Commandos. So we'll go over something we like here. Matt, we'll start with you. What you like about these guys?
I like that they have protection just innately. They don't have to be contesting an aptic objective. They just have protection, so it just makes them that much harder to take down.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's very fair. I do like that a lot myself, too. I guess I'll go ahead and kick off the second part here. I like that they just innately have scale. Scale's kind of like very underutilized. We don't see a lot of stuff with scale yet. I like that, you know, just to kind of go into how scale works. If you're ever given a dash or an advance as like an offshoot from not a move action, normally, unless you're stopping at an ingress point, you cannot climb with those moves because you're only getting that type of move. You cannot turn it into a climb. Scale lets you turn it into a climb instead. I know a lot of people get very confused about, oh, if I have an advance and I have scale, I can move my full advance and then go up. That's not true. You get to turn that right. You get to turn that advance into a climb. Therefore, you use the shorter movement tool or the dash movement tool, if you will, instead of but still go up that terrain. Which again, we'll probably talk a little bit more about that later in this episode. Ben, what about you? What do you think?
So I'm gonna bring it a little different. Are you ready? Hold on now. I'm talking about Delta Squad. Just painting them up like Delta Squad is so freaking cool. I love these models. Their kit is not terrible. I enjoy them. I obviously run them when I run Lumi because I do think that the Clone Commandos are actually, I think, the best clone supports, in my opinion. But just running their models are just awesome. I love them. Painting them up as Delta Squad is awesome. I have seriously debated about getting another box just so I can get all of Delta Squad, but I have a spending problem. So
I get that for sure. I feel you in that sentiment. Absolutely. Yeah. Gosh. Yeah. I will say, like, a little off note before we go into like dislikes about these guys, they hit like a truck for a support.
Yeah, they
like did. Access to what, 8 damage. So good. All right, let's go into dislike. So, Ben, you had a strong Delta Squad thing here. What do you not like about these guys? Are these like your go-to?
Yeah, so these are my go-to. I'm going to try to resist to go down a rabbit hole. Sean, you said it really well. These guys hit like a Mack truck, and I love that about them. And it makes me sad. What I don't like about them is I just wish that the other clone troopers were something like this, where they can kind of hit like a freight train, or at least hit a little bit more consistently, have a little bit more access to damage. But one of the consistent truths that really frustrates me about clone supports is their defensive expertise. I don't know about you, but I watch those Clone Wars, and those clone troopers never die, ever. Except for the ones that like get blasted off screen, but that's fine. That's what they're there for, right? But these guys, it's just interesting for me, and to see a one success on their expertise is just a little disheartening. I'd like to think that these commandos are a little bit more tanky, and of course, I mean they kind of are with their instant access to protection, which is really nice. But I don't, that's just kind of, the three expertise with one block and a reposition. I've always been confused of when a higher expertise, you lose defensive bonuses. That's always been kind of confusing for me. So yeah. I've had that plenty of times where like, oh, I get three expertise. Oh, I know on my tree, I've got a two on two. So oh, I should be, oh no, wait, I lose a block on one of my on my clone troopers. So that's been really frustrating.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong. I do think it is a little strange. Now, don't get me wrong, too. Like, it's 1, 2, and 3 on the dice here to hit these expertise pips. But the fact that you go from 1 is 1, 2 is 2, but then 3 is back to 1, but you get a reposition. I don't know. Maybe they should have made it like a 4+, keep the 2, get the reposition to balance that out a little bit better.
Yeah, I'd be totally cool with that.
Yeah, I'll go into my dislike with these guys, and it kind of rolls into what you're talking about here. Correct me if I'm wrong. They have the lowest stamina pool of any support we've seen.
Yeah, yep. They only got 6.
Yeah,
they only have 6. Yep. Right, and so like when you're losing that extra block on that expertise like that. I understand they have the built-in protection, but man, you're gonna feel it. Like that's rough.
Yeah, they're still gonna get one shot occasionally from certain primaries.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
In a world of Mauls and Grievous and Darth Vaders, who just gotta go, "What up, baby?" and just slap you until the other world. Yeah, I've lost my commandos in one shots. Too many times that I'd like to admit. And that's where a lot of that frustration comes from. It's like, oh, these are like the commandos. And yeah, they're pretty awesome. Oh, they're dead.
Yeah.
And they're dead.
Right. And I almost want to say, like, with this kit, they kind of promote, like, obviously most of the commandos do this, but these guys, even more so, like, they promote this play style of, like, keep them on that back line. They don't even like really want to touch the midline if possible, because that's where everybody else is kind of swarming to and getting at. Like, they just want to hang back, don't really want to move them forward. You might just defensive maneuver them, just give them that hunker, and you're just gonna pew like that midline down. I don't really see a reason why you would ever want to put these guys on mid unless if there's just a flank that no one's touching that they can get to. Yeah. All right. Matt, what about you? What's your dislike on these guys?
While their coordinated fire is nice, I don't like it as much as some of the other clone troopers' coordinated fires.
Yeah, was that a single damage, right?
Yeah, single damage. Yeah. So like, once they get wounded, you're not going to want to spend a force for that usually.
No. Absolutely. Yeah, that's a very fair point. The fact that, like, once they wound your that ability, you might as well just scratch it off, I think, most times. Unless if it's the 1 point of damage that you need just to, like, remove someone.
Yeah.
I see you just not caring a lot of times. Well, all right. So that is it for our Luminara box review. These are kind of like our thoughts on these characters. Again, very surface thoughts, but just kind of gives you an idea of a little bit of play styles with these characters we kind of touch base on and like strengths and weaknesses of them. So from here, let's go ahead and move on to our main topic. We're going to go ahead and speak about some board setup, like terrain setups here, and then kind of branching off of that, talk about some elevation and like how that affects the game. So with board setup, just you're at your shop or you know, any other way you're playing the game here, you have your table and you sit there with your opponent. How are you guys setting up your table? You guys, like, I know in the rule book it says set the mission up first, then do the terrain. What do you guys do? What determines your board setup? Matt, we can go ahead and start with you, man.
I still follow that. I mean, I set out all the markers, objective markers. Then I try to make the terrain not symmetrical and make the elevation matter. Like, actually make sure some of those objectives end up on elevation.
Yeah. Absolutely. I know I kind of branch back and forth between the two. Sometimes I just forget to put out the markers. I'll just throw up some terrain. I played so much MCP.
Yeah.
Right. But I have found that it does seem to be a bit easier if you actually lay out the mission objectives first and then put the terrain out and then just raise whatever overlaps. Ben, what about you?
Yeah, so I also come from just throwing everything on the terrain, throw the terrain on the board and then set the missions down. So at least for me, until we get another mission pack, that's probably what I'm just going to continue to do, because I've played it enough where I can kind of generally eyeball where things are going to be or where the objectives are going to be. So trying to kind of set things up, you know, to Matt's point, right, to in a non, you know, symmetrical way, but making it nice. We've got a really cool mat that we really like, that's kind of like a lava mat, you know, and to try to make things, you know, scenic and, you know, thematic. We try to do that a little bit. We're
okay. We get some Mustafar action going on.
Oh yeah.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, no, absolutely. I think I don't think there's necessarily like a right or wrong. Obviously, like once events really start rolling for this game, no one's breaking down terrain to set up missions to reset up terrain, right? Like, you're going to be sitting at like already set up tables. You're going to be setting up your mission tokens on top of that. And that's just something you're going to have to like kind of learn how to do. So with that said, I don't think there's necessarily a right or wrong way. I know the rule book says it a certain way, but yeah, either way is fine. You might find one way a little slower, but you know, that doesn't matter as much. Now, a better question on this, though, or just not a better question, but like a more like topical question on this and what we're kind of getting to is, how much terrain is too much? What about you, Ben? Have you seen any tables that you're just kind of like glares your eyes a little bit on like too much going on?
So I have a really interesting relationship with terrain on the board. So my main affiliation, MCP, is Brotherhood. So I love to see full boards go, let's do this. Right. But it's really interesting in this game. And I will confess, I have not found the sweet spot yet of what is too much and what is not too much. There are definitely moments when I think you can definitely tell when it's obviously, you know, things kind of piled on top of each other. I'm not a big fan of stacking, right? So I had a buddy come one time and he was just like in love of those boxes and just wanted to like build freaking boxes on top. Like it was Legos. It was kind of nuts. I was like, hey, can we, let's just chill. Let's just make them maybe two boxes high. Right. I'm still trying to find that love, hate, you know, sweet spot of how many or how much is too much. I find it really interesting in terms of coming from a different game system. And, you know, we'll talk a little bit about, you know, how does this affect cover, especially as someone, I primarily play Galactic Republic. And so trying to make sure that there's still enough where you can benefit from cover, obviously, but also not being an egregious amount where, well, everywhere I go, as long as I have that hunker token, I'm going to gain it, and nanny nanny boo boo on you for just not interacting with cover, right?
Right. Yeah, no, I get that for sure. Matt, do you want to like also like talk off of that or?
Yeah, I mean, there's I've so far personally I haven't played on a board that has had too much terrain. I've always been on a site where there's been too little, in my opinion, because most of my games have been demo games with just the core set terrain. So I usually needs a little bit more, in my opinion, than that.
Yeah.
But I mean, I've seen some pictures on Facebook where people put up like showed their board that they built and like they have like gantries like three high and like overlapping each other. And like that's a little too much for me. when you got different gantries crossing over each other in different directions, I'm like, all right, you know, why? There's no reason to have that, in my opinion.
Right. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. It looks cool.
It looks cool. It does
really
look cool.
But yeah, but like
play on it would be, I think, a little difficult.
Yeah, for sure. Especially like when you have like the overlapping gantries, right? Where you have like, well, here's your lower tier gantry, but then here you have this one gantry going also over it. It's like, well, I want my guy to stay on that first one, but now I got to like reach in and oops, I knocked over the gantry.
Yeah.
your yeah. Models are now spilled on the floor.
One and I'll have to say this, and this is something I say in every time I play a miniatures game. I have really shaky hands, and when I try to concentrate, they shake worse. And that is something that's a struggle with this game, where if people get a little too inventive with these gantries and these beautiful sets and, oh, now I've got to put my model to get on the objective in this in-between spot. And, you know, if things aren't, you know, connected properly, oops, now it everything comes crushing down. Your beautiful painted models are crushed. And yeah, now we got to play, you know, 50 card pickup, and that's not
good. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Something to kind of branch off of this too, and this is kind of what I'll get into as well, is like, I 100% agree with everything that's been mentioned here. One thing too is because of how like the cover rules in this game work, and I think Ben, you may have kind of like mentioned it slightly earlier. It is not good to have like one giant connected piece of terrain, where I've seen at countless times, this the mistake I've seen the most hands down is where people will just like set out like their core box plus of terrain, but they'll have it like from deployment zone to deployment zone, this one giant piece just connected by gantries. And it's like, do you guys know that because of the cover rules, like you can see you across the map? And even though there's like two pieces in the way, but because it's all connected.
Yeah. Infinite cover. Yeah. Yeah. It's right. Just the super cover. The one big noodle of cover. Yep.
Yeah. One big noodle of cover, and also line of sight too. Like, because it's all connected, like now, like, well, I'm standing here. He can't see me. Right. Well, because you connected all this with gantries. Yes, he can. Yeah. Which, you know, that's, you know, I'll be into, you know, like, so love AMG for, you know, everything they've done with this game. So like that, that's one thing I wish they would, like, you know, if they ever do like a reevaluation, try to clean that up a little bit.
Yeah.
Matt, have you experienced that at all yourself?
Not really. Like I said, most of my games have been on just too little terrain, so I haven't really ran into many cover problems myself. And usually I'm playing droids, so I don't ever have cover.
Dirty, dirty droids.
That's right. Oh man, them droids. Oh god.
Ugh. I'm not gonna waste that action to get a hunker token. I don't need that.
Yeah, I was about to say, do you even know what a hunker token is, Matt? Do you know what those are?
Yeah, because Obi-Wan just lets your guys keep them all the time.
That's true. I actually take yours. It's actually really nice. I just get to keep yours. Yeah.
Right. Oh god. Yeah, Obi-Wan is a menace for sure with those hunker tokens. All right, great. Yeah, now, so I guess branching off of all this, so we kind of talked about terrain here a bit. You know, we like to make sure, I guess one thing I want to kind of get across here is make sure you are separating your terrain pieces. It's great to have a couple structures, but just make sure it's not one giant structure. Try to have two to three kind of placed out. Also, speaking on all of that too, ingress points. How many is enough? How many is too many? I know here locally we've tried not to clutter too much. We try to have like three to four per like larger structure of terrain of like, you know, gantry connected, anything like that. We try to make sure that there's usually like two ingress points, kind of per side, if you will, from deployment. And then depending on the structure size, of course. What about you guys? What are you guys doing for ingress points? Ben, what about you?
So I'm actually kind of in that four place. So I've actually predominantly, it's been weird. I've played most of my games with four ingress points. I've actually played zero with five, which I don't know why, but I've played several with six ingress points. And that has seemed too much. Where, you know, if off a reposition, they're going off into a ingress point, and there's just a lot of extra movement. You know, the defensive maneuvers that, you know, the Republic gets, and on top of that with ingress points, all of a sudden makes them, you know, really, really fast. I'm kind of in a place where I think six is too much. I haven't actually played any with five yet, but I've been quite happy with four across the whole map.
Okay, good. And this is like just for, are you talking about like just four ingress points for everything or just like?
Four ingress points across the whole map.
Yep. Really?
That seems a bit light to me. I mean, I like it because, you know, clones have less access to climb up, but.
Yeah, it's been weird, right? And again, that's why I'm, you know, as I tried to mention, I'm still trying to find this like sweet spot, right? Now, I will also say that, so we have access to the core box terrain and then the terrain plus box. And I think people are still trying to kind of like get unique with different maps and different, you know, how, what's an ingress point when you're not using maybe some of those AMG official, you know, terrain pieces. That's been that type of conversation. You know, is this log? A, you know, this slightly slanted log, is that an ingress point or is that just kind of, you know, just a terrain piece? So, you know, having those conversations, I actually really like, you know, where the game is in terms of people are still trying to ask those in questions and find that sweet spot. So, that's kind of, I think four has been okay.
I got you. That's funny enough. And that's kind of Matt was touching on there too. Like that's actually the lowest I've heard or seen. Usually I see the opposite where I think people load up maps way too much. Matt, what have you usually play with and what have you kind of like seen locally?
I usually try to have like one to two ingress points per like structure. Cause at least that way, like, don't put them like opposite each other, but put them so like at least each board side has access usually to try to get up that.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, as I mentioned earlier, I'm in the boat of, I usually do around three per structure, depending on the size of the structure. Of course, I have had larger structures and we've put four on there. But again, it's just, it equals up to like, is it sitting horizontal, like across the midline, right? Like if it's a larger piece that's covering over your middle and either the left or right, objective tokens, and it maybe has like an upper tier. Cause I know we have the high ground terrain packs over here as well that we play with at times. And so you have like an actual second level from ground level. And so we'll usually use like maybe two smaller ladders on each side. And then we might have like a longer ladder that gets to that immediately jumps up to that other level further down. And then on top of that too, if you haven't seen that set, there's a built-in ingress point in that larger structure.
Mm-hmm.
So we usually play like that three or so, three to four, so depending, but that's three seems to be like the nice, like safe spot. Sometimes two, depending if it's like a smaller thing. But I've seen people load up like four or five and they're just like making sure that, hey, no matter where I stop, I can go up this thing. And it's, that to me is a bit too much.
Yeah. That makes it too accessible. I mean, what's the point of having like jetpacks or whatnot?
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
And that was actually the question that I was going to ask is, do you find with that many ingress points, not to say that I don't think it's an egregious amount by any means, but do you think that, does that diminish characters that have jump or, you know, jetpacks or things like that, that do they lose? So that's the question I've been asking myself is if I put too many ingress points on the map, right, across the whole board set, am I diminishing the value that of characters that have either, you know, the powers that, that give them jump or maybe jumps on their tree? What do you think?
So I think it can. I think that actually is a very good, like, topic to bring up. It absolutely can just, like, it put, makes, like, I guess a little more validation for, let's say, the commandos, right? Or,
right,
the,
right.
Sorry, yeah, absolutely, yeah. So, like, you all of a sudden, you're like, hey, we're only playing with, like, 3 to 4 ingress points over the whole map now. Now you're looking at these Mandalorians, and you're like, these guys look a lot better now because all of these other characters are going to be having a harder time getting to where they need to be, or these guys can just hop up through and do their thing. I will agree. I don't know if, like, the right balance has per se been found, nor do am I sure, like, what the right balance is completely. Matt, what do you think, man? What do you think on that?
Yeah, I think the game's still too new to know that correct balance yet. I mean, I've still only gotten, like, locally a couple of nights where we've had, like, multiple people at the shop to play the game. So, I mean, it's sometimes a little hard to, like, find that balance when you're not getting to refresh the board a lot or, you know, get other people's opinions at the shop. Like, do you think this is too much or too little?
Sure. I mean, I know it's going to make events very interesting because, you know, event to event, table to table, you know, you might sit at one table and you have a setup like what I mentioned where you're next, you know, you have like 2 to 3 ingress points per structure. Then you sit at like the next table over and then you're like, oh, I have that point. There's one over here. That's it. but I guess asking ourselves, do we think that's okay?
Well, and I actually think that gives a lot of credence to the premier format, right?
Yeah.
So, I think sometimes it's kind of rough, you know, to talk about things in a vacuum, though I think those are also important discussions. But if we kind of take this as a whole, we look at the premier format, and maybe you bring, you know, one of your 4 squads is a Mandalorian squad that has access to a lot of jumps because maybe you're going to an event and you don't know how many ingress points. So having a squad, you know, or a strike force that can reliably get around terrain without having to worry about ingress points, I think is a strength to that strike force, right? And I think that's what makes building, I think, more rounded, you know, premier forces, I think, is really, really important to the structure of some events or competitive events that I think is really interesting and adds another layer of complexity.
Yes.
And I think at an event, exactly to what you're saying, Sean, I think it's vitally important if you're an event organizer and you are, you know, at those places creating tables, I think you should intentionally make these boards significantly different from one another for that same exact reason.
Yeah, no, yeah, absolutely.
Terrain should matter in the game and make a difference.
Yep. I think that's one of the reasons why, like, a huge drawing point to this game is the importance of terrain outside of, like, a game like MCP where it's like, oh, you interact with it by throwing it or, you know, using it to your advantage in a damage sense. This game, you get to use that elevation or cover, what have you. Like, oh, my strike force here, my strike team can easily scale this stuff, whereas you're playing a bunch of like droids or clones and you're having to find these ingress points or burn whole move actions just to get where you need to be. That's all extremely viable. I guess, like, for board setup, we're kind of touching base on our elevation here. We'll wrap up the board topic here. A large to small piece ratio. This is kind of a little interesting one that I kind of wanted to throw out before we moved fully onto elevation. How much small, like, obviously we talked about our structures and whatnot. We usually have like 2 to 3 roughly. We try not to connect one giant one. are smaller pieces of like terrain for cover and whatnot. How much are you guys using? Matt, what about you? What do you think?
Usually I'm using like 3 to 4 pieces that are like on the ground too, because I got a little, a different company's like little pre-painted kit that had like a bunch of cargo boxes and stuff that fits very well with the AMG stuff. So it looks like it's in where the Star Wars universe, and like that way I can, you know, provide extra cover where it's not just like a whole building blocking everything.
Yeah. What about you, Ben?
So this is where I'm struggling, is I like having smaller pieces, one for the aesthetic and the, you know, the theme of boards. But this is where I have found that a lot of, at least people that I'm playing with, oversaturate boards with a lot of scatter terrain, right? It's just kind of all over the place. It makes things a little bit difficult in terms of kind of positioning models. There's a lot of pushing in this game. And I think, you know, some of the more strategic players or players who are going to kind of be more aware of this can backstop themselves a little too frequently with too much scatter terrain, right? And I, again, think that diminishes, I think, the heart of the game, where there is so much pushing and there should be some lanes or avenues, right? Now, again, you want to reward players who have that kind of tactful mind of learning how to, I think that's one of the points of emphasis of this game, is how to position yourself correctly, right?
Yeah.
But you it's weird. And again, this is where I'm really struggling, is if you oversaturate the board with too much scatter terrain, those small pieces, I think it can be an obstacle to one of the strongest points, one of the coolest things about this game. So I haven't found that sweet spot yet.
Yeah, I mean, the game, you kind of mentioned it yourself earlier, like, the game's not called Scatter Point, right? Like,
right.
Hey, got him. Yeah, but yeah, you don't want a, I've seen kind of a mixture. You know how like the core box like that comes with the little crates, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
My locals, I have gotten to where they're just using like dice on the table. They're literally, before they set up the big terrain, they'll grab a handful of those boxes, roll them out like they're rolling dice, and be like, all right, that's where the scatter terrain is going to be. And then they'll set up their boards from there. I'm like, what are you guys doing?
What is this madness?
No, in the core box ones, I just glued some of those together to make bigger, bigger.
Yeah, I agree. But I like
those on gantries sometimes too, to help block off stuff on gantries.
Yes, I do like that. I love uses like that with the scatter point or the scatter.
Yeah, you did it. You're going to mess yourself up now. You done did it.
But yeah, with the scatter terrain, absolutely. Like setting them up like on gantries or just up higher to kind of help like things like that. Yes, I love that. I know a big point of contention too is like the little guard rails on the gantries. Like, are those stopping points? Are those not? I personally don't think so, because they're like little nubbins.
I just started leaving those off. I mean, there's no OSHA in Star Wars.
Right? I use them actually as my little hooks for my ladders. For my
exactly. That's what, that's what I'm starting to use too.
Yeah, it's fantastic for them. But yeah, no. So I think there's a some people, like, I'll kind of go on what you were talking about, Matt, with yours. Like, I don't think 2 or 3 is enough per se, but I definitely agree with what Ben was getting at. Like, you want to find a medium. Like, you don't want too much. There are a lot of pushes. Like, just about everyone's attack trees have some form of shoves. You have the crazy force push with your stuff we talked about earlier and Asajj. Like, you don't want too much to where it just makes those abilities irrelevant. So yeah, you want to kind of find that medium and just go from there. I like doing usually like a couple pieces close around deployment zones, and usually a couple pieces like around like the midline, but usually no more than like 6 to 7 scattered throughout the whole board. And some of them are going to be in locations that it's like might be useful towards the beginning of the game, but may not have a use like for the majority of the rest. And I think that's okay. All right. Well, before we get on to elevation, we'll go ahead and take a quick break for our sponsor.
This podcast would absolutely not be possible if it wasn't for our sponsors, our friends at Tritex Games and GameChefs.org. If you're looking to buy some sweet, sweet tabletop fun in the U.S., head over to GameChefs.org and use the promo code GamersGuild for 15% off. And if you're in the EU, head over to Tritex Games and get 5% off their already deeply discounted goodies using the code TritexGGCP5. And if you have a local game store, keep supporting them. We are all for that. You can help support the podcast by joining the Gamers Guild Patreon for as little as $1 a month or, wait for it, $12 a year. That's right. I can do math. Also, join us on our Discord and be a part of the Gamers Guild discussion for all things fun.
All right. So, going on to, I guess, like branching off of the board setup. Board setup, I don't want to take away from it not being an important topic, but I do think a more interesting topic can be like elevation talk. And I know behind the scenes, when we first kind of brought Ben along, he kind of hit us with this question and kind of sparked this episode. Ben, how about you kind of take it away for us? What do you want to like bring to the table real quick about like elevation and kind of like what your thoughts on it?
Yeah. So, you know, as I've been kind of just exploring the game more and, you know, we've had some, a little bit of resurgence of people getting into it. And I think the Ahsoka show has been helpful for that. One of the questions I wanted to ask others and especially our group here, you know, in Gamers Guild is, How impactful is elevation? Is it essential for the game state? And, you know, is it essential that you have a symmetrical amount of elevation? Or can the game survive on just an asymmetrical setting? Or what if you played on a board where there was no elevation? Those are some of the questions I have been asking myself and have been trying different games just here at home with my wife. My poor wife has to bear the front of all of these crazy ideas of like, hey, we're gonna play this game of Shatterpoint, but we're gonna do it a little bit differently and let's just see how it goes. And it could 100% be awful, so just be ready for that. Those have been some of the questions that I've been trying to ask myself, and I've been kind of all over the place. And I kind of want to kick it back to you. I know we've got a little bit of, you know, kind of some of the pre-conversation, you know, just in some of our individual chats, but if I can, Matt, what do you think? How essential and impactful is elevation to the game?
I think that you need elevation in this game. It plays a big role because, I mean, you have the high ground, so you help ignore cover. So, I mean, it definitely helps with all those pesky clones having cover all game. But it also makes your movements decisions matter and makes you be more tactical about where you're placing your models as well.
Yeah, I think those are good points for sure. I guess if you don't mind, I'll give my two cents.
Please.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. So I think strategy-wise, especially with like your combinations of like a lot of your melee in this game, like in getting that engagement range, if you will, a lot of our higher hitting characters are these powerhouses in engagement, right? Where elevation breaks that. Like if I'm able to get a character above you, or even like if you're up, I can get my guy below you. It gives me that opportunity. Let's say I have a ranged character to get away from you, even if I just have that dash movement, and makes it to where like, well, now you have to waste maybe coming up after me or coming opposite of that, coming below me to get me back, if you will, once you kind of flip that order over. When you're going talking about like attacking, things like that. Also, the fact of how cover comes into play, where instead of covers not just being behind something or within that one, if you will, being on top of any sort of elevation or just that terrain piece as well, gives you that cover as long as you have that hunker token. It gives you a little bit more of a broad area to be in instead of just being behind some terrain. I can definitely see a world, especially after touching base on our board setup, about like, hey, like how much terrain, this, that, and the other that we should use for these setups and like for the ingress points. I can see a world where maybe you come across a board that's more scattered terrain than it is actual elevated terrain, where you only have like one piece that like maybe one objective's on, and maybe like another piece is at another, it's like no objectives accessible. It's just there. And maybe you just have more just like line of sight blocking terrain that you have to work around, maybe like a forest on indoor or something like that.
That'd be neat.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Matt, go ahead.
No, I was just saying a indoor board would be neat.
Right. Yeah. Like maybe like just like a bunch of trees, but you have a couple of like the Ewok like tree houses, like maybe just like one bridge to like connecting one to another, but you don't have a lot of them. And that way you still have this board where terrain matters, but now you're playing this different style of game of like, well, now I'm not looking to go up. Maybe now I'm looking to like use this range character to like start a shot and then move behind a tree.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's been a really interesting discussion point. You know, I think, you know, obviously elevation was a big design space for this game. I think it's super important. And so I don't know if you can really faithfully take it away from the game. I think one of the most important things for me that I've found in just kind of asking this question again is the importance of contesting, right? And how elevation works in the midst of that, right? It's not MCP, right? So having the importance of, especially with the introductions of some of these supporting squads that are actually individuals, a lot of the Inquisitors, right? You know, fifth brother, fourth sister, you know, some of these, how those teams would actually really struggle if everything was on the same playing field. So I that was one of the things that I did this week, you know, was wrestling with that. All right, how does this feel? Oh, wow, this seems really unfair and not super great. And I can see now how, you know, elevation is, okay, I think, you know, really integral of just the game state in general.
Yeah.
But I guess, kind of leading into this kind of second thought, what about, you know, have you guys experienced maybe too many objectives on elevated points, you know, on some of maybe these highly dense, you know, terrain, you know, boards? I know Matt, like I said, we just need to start throwing more terrain on your board. It sounds like we just need to start throw some like cups and cardboard boxes on your board. but you know, have you ever maybe experienced that, or how would you react to that, Sean? Have you played something like that?
Yeah, I've played. So I think the most objective points in a game I've played that were elevated has been 5. I've had a map where it was literally the whole midline was elevated, and then it was one on my deployment side, and then like one on theirs, where it wasn't quite like a plus per se, but it was like the whole mid, my back left, like my opponent's side left one to me, their point, and then like my middle one was all elevated. That was not the most fun match. It definitely gives it high advantage to the player that has more shoves / like force pushes in their list. And I just so happened to be playing against droids that had like Asajj Ventress and like Magna Guards.
Nice.
Yeah, I got smoked that game because he just kept knocking me off. He would just be like, oh, cool, you're here now and you're not. And I'm up here and you're down there and I'm contesting. And that was a, it was kind of a feels bad. It, not going to lie. Just because of how that board setup was. And it was just like, well, the majority of the points, like, you know, that first struggle is going to be the whole center line and then whatever else. And we know three of the five guaranteed are going to be elevated. And he had this just very strong game plan of just like, cool, I'm just going to, like, I'm not even worried about wounding you. I'm just shoving you off points. And I'm just going to maintain this high ground, if you will. And it was hard to deal with. I brought a list that game that I had shoves and stuff of my own, but he kind of had them twofold.
Mm.
Yeah.
I'm just perusing again through the rules. And I guess, and again, a lot of where I come from, you know, is from games like Warmer Hordes or MCP predominantly. And, you know, one of the things that I really appreciated about those games that I really appreciate about MCP is terrain suggestions of how much is on the board, what the size suggestions are. I'm just perusing. I don't think we have that yet for Shatterpoint, right?
Yeah.
I'm on page 18 of rule books, and I'm not seeing, you know, just talking about kind of the board size. It says, you know, should contain a mixture of various shapes and sizes. Do you think, and maybe I can shoot this to Matt, do you think that Shatterpoint 1 needs that or would greatly benefit from something like that?
Matt, what do you think, man?
I mean, it'd definitely be beneficial, but there's so many different, like, worlds in Star Wars that you could really build it however you want. I mean, like, somebody could try to build a, like, Coruscant board where there's elevation, like, stock full of terrain. You're, like, got different levels you got to fight on. But there could be, like, a Dune Sea board where there's, like, nothing but moisture evaporators. I mean, some guidelines, yes, I think we need at least kind of like the MCP one where it gives us, like, a minimum at least, but not necessarily a maximum.
Yeah, I can see that for sure. I was going to say, the only thing I know that they've had, and kind of going back to what you're saying, that the only thing I've seen outside of, hey, you know, like, set out your mission, then put the terrain, is they've said that the majority of the terrain you want it towards the center of the board. But there's nothing I've seen in any sort of AMG doc. And if there is anybody wants to throw us a message in the Discord or anything like that, please. Like, but I've seen nothing from AMG stating, like, hey, here's an ideal amount of, like, elevation you want for your objectives or anything like that. But I personally, I'm okay with it. I think once you have these guidelines, it becomes that immediate standard. And then all of a sudden now, like, for, like, TOs and things like that, like, you now know, like, hey, I expect to see, like, this many terrain functions with this many platforms, and, like, it kind of takes a little bit of the fun out of it.
Yeah, because then you get people, like, complaining, like, at least MCP wise, you got too little terrain because people don't want Brotherhood to be too powerful, or you got too much because Brotherhood's too powerful. But the only thing they say terrain wise, I just looked over the showdown document in the premiere one, and it says that, it needs to incorporate terrain features of all varying elevations. It doesn't say any amount that you should, just says it needs to have varying elevations.
Okay. Well, that is good to know, I guess, for something we mentioned earlier, right? Of like, hey, should we just have a mat of just like none? If they're stating that you do want multiple, maybe it's, you know, it's cool to have that, like, you know, be light on it, but like not have none for elevation. Right. Well, cool. Thank you so much, Ben, on that. With this wrapping up this elevation talk here, what are some ways that you guys kind of use elevation to your advantage? Let's go from like an actual strategic point here, then we'll kind of wrap up this episode up. Matt, what about you? What do you use? How do you use your elevation to your advantage in a game?
Kind of similar how you lost that game the other day. Like, I'm going to try to, you know, control the top and, like, especially with, like, Asajj or, like, Django or somebody that can, like, just use an action to pull you off or push you off and then put myself back up there. That way I'm controlling that high ground or whatnot to make you like waste actions to get back up there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It is a very strong strategy. I have found that there's the width of a lot of the terrain we have accessible currently is not enough to stop like two shoves. Like all of our gantries, if you sit at a certain point, you might be able to stop that first one, but that second one's going to get you. What about you, Ben? What have you been doing for to like take advantage of the elevation?
Yeah, you know, one of the interesting things that I've been trying to balance is the importance of trying to find ways to backstop yourself on some of these multi-leveled gantries. I think, you know, we've talked about that a little bit, you know, in this episode is, you know, multi-point one. So there's usually maybe there's like a little pillar that you can kind of lean on. Because one of the interesting things that I find that most people make mistakes, especially is actually with Django, of how pushes work in this game. Where again, and forgive me for referencing MCP a whole bunch, but a lot of people that are trying this game are coming from that game system and are thinking that they can push themselves through themselves or push an opponent through themselves. And, you know, so I've had Django hop on a point and he will do the capture wire. And I've had to instruct people like, hey, well, I hit you and stop. And that's a really feels bad moment, but at the same time, trying to position yourself of that's really the only way that you can get me without maybe using too much force, or if you don't have enough force of, well, you can't shove me off because I've backstopped myself in a really meaningful way. And the only way to get me off is if you come up here and pull me off, but then you can't pull me through yourself. So I found that really good positioning. You know, because I've been bullied by Magna Guard way too many times in my Shadowborn career already. Those silly purple wielding robots are just the worst. And so trying to find unique ways to really benefit myself of not getting pushed off, you know, by them is important. And again, that kind of matters with how obviously the terrain is, but yeah, trying to find ways to back or stop yourself.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely like body blocking, things like that. There's a lot of times I understand like there's a strength to using like your duo supports, if you will, to like kind of spread, you know, divide and conquer and get on two separate points. But you know, there's a lot of times where, especially if it's on an elevated piece, might be better just to take both the supports, send them to that same objective just so they can kind of body block for each other on that objective. Another thing I know I've been doing to use elevation at my advantage is body blocking and trying to just like stop ingress points. If there's ever an objective that's like close to an ingress point, and I try my damnedest to just be like, well, I'm going to put my character right here to where if you use this ingress point to come up, you're not just on the objective now. I'm now stopping you. You have to place yourself outside of it. Or if you get, you know, like if you have a couple, there's a whole scramble up there around it. Next thing you know, you're just body blocking the ingress point completely and they can't use it at all. So that's another thing to kind of keep in mind outside of what's been said here. But yeah, I think those are some very strong strategies. I know just using your shoves and pushes to your advantage, as Matt stated here. I mean, you have some really good points on the body blocking. Is there any other kind of final comments we want to say and like leave here about elevation or board setup in general?
No, I think we've really kind of hit the head. I hope that, you know, my hope that as you listen to this episode and you play your next Shatterpoint game, one to kind of ask yourselves, you know, how important was this last match of, you know, elevation, the terrain, you know, how much did that come into account? Could I have benefited from having more characters with jump, with scale? You know, have those conversations pre the match with, you know, if you have a friendly opponent, you know, who's able to do that, and also being able to do that after the game and having kind of a little breakdown, I think would be really, really neat. So, yeah, I hope that you can kind of take away from this, those thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely. Matt, what about you, man?
Yeah. I mean, the train's a great addition to this game, so just set it up, have fun. But it should matter during your game. It shouldn't just be there for looks.
Yes, absolutely. I think the thing I'll leave off on is try different variations. As we kind of discussed here, and one of the great selling points, in my opinion, about this game is like, yeah, you can have a board loaded up and just like, hey, you know, we're going to have all these different high points. It's going to be great, different levels of it. Or you might have a board where you're just like, hey, we're going to play some more line of sight blocking terrain, but not necessarily scalable. But just make sure you do have a little bit of scalable. But like, you know, try different things. Try more or less ingress points. See what you guys feel about that. It definitely makes, like, you know, teams like Mandalorians or anyone with a jump ability very strong. I think that's a huge boon to this game, is that the board matters so much when it comes to your strike team. Well, all right, any closing thoughts, guys, or anything you guys want to share before we get out of here? Ben, Matt, you.
Yeah, no, I'm great. I'm just excited to be on the cast. I hope that this lovely sultry voice will soothe you into the light side. Both of you will be
that
will
be working
on bringing you guys to the light.
I don't know about all that, but I mean, it was quite soothing, though. I will agree.
Yeah, it's great to have you on the cast, Ben, because I know I enjoyed playing games with both you and your wife at NashCon this past year, so glad to have you on.
Same here, honestly. Yeah, great addition, Ben. I'm very happy to have you here, and hope to have you on a lot more episodes, man.
I appreciate it, guys. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed all of this talk about board setup and elevation. Please try out some of the ideas we've talked about, and just like that, with Sean from the Gamers Guild here, just want to say keep on gaming.